The first light over Haiti revealed a landscape already changed. Streets that had been dry the evening before were now rivers, thick with mud, branches, and fragments of homes carried in fast-moving currents. Tropical Storm Melissa, weakened on the satellite maps and stripped of its hurricane strength, had arrived not with wind but with water, the kind of relentless, unbroken rain that turns hillsides into slides and riverbeds into deadly channels. In the early hours, families climbed onto rooftops, calling out to neighbors they could no longer reach. The sound of rushing water drowned out everything else. Across the Artibonite Valley and into the northern plains, entire neighborhoods woke to rising floods they never expected from a storm that forecasts had already downgraded. Aid workers navigating the first submerged roads found overturned vehicles, blocked bridges, and people stranded wherever the ground rose even a little higher. Survival became the only focus, shifting from hour to hour as the rain continued. What happened next would expose, once again, how a weakening storm can still break a country already living on the edge. Chapter 1. When the rains arrived. The rain began before dawn, steady but unremarkable, the kind of early shower that marks the humid seasons in Haiti. At first, nothing in the sky hinted at danger. The low clouds carried a soft gray light. The air was heavy but calm. Roosters called across fragmented neighborhoods, and the day seemed ready to start like any other. What no one yet understood was that the edge of Tropical Storm Melissa had arrived during the night, weakened in name but still carrying enough moisture to overwhelm the land below. Forecasts the previous day had repeated the same statement. The storm was losing strength as it drifted through the Caribbean. The National Hurricane Center's advisories described Melissa as a disorganized system, with its winds dropping and its center struggling to hold shape. Meteorologists warned of rain, but they stressed that the storm's most violent phase had already passed. For much of the region, that sounded like reassurance. For Haiti, it meant something else entirely. In a country shaped by mountains, cut by steep valleys, and carved by rivers that can rise with little warning, even a fading storm can carry danger. Decades of environmental strain have left the hillsides exposed. Large sections of land no longer hold tree cover, making the soil loose and quick to slide. Rivers that once wound gently through farmland have grown unpredictable. Heavy rain can lift them within minutes. These realities are documented by local agencies and international observers, forming a pattern that repeats every season. In the hours before sunrise, the first bands of Melissa's rain swept across the northern coast. Residents in Cap Haïtien saw it through their windows as a curtain of mist drifting inland. Motorcycle taxis passed slowly through the narrow streets, their riders shielding their heads with cloth or plastic. No one thought a disaster was about to unfold. People had lived through stronger storms. They had seen violent winds, torrential downpours, and coastal surge. This, by comparison, seemed light. In the town of Limonade, a farmer named Etienne walked toward his small plot of land, checking the clouds as he went. He noted the rainfall, but continued on, believing it would pass by midday. The soil needed moisture after weeks of heat. To him, Melissa sounded like a storm that had already failed to maintain itself. Radio hosts repeated the same message, citing official bulletins from the Civil Protection Directorate. The expectation was simple: be cautious, but do not panic. Across the Artibonite Valley, the rain grew steadier. The region is Haiti's main agricultural basin, fed by one of the largest river systems in the country. In years of ordinary weather, the Artibonite River is manageable and vital. In years of heavy rain, it becomes a channel of force, moving swiftly from the highlands through scattered farms and settlements. On that morning, the water level began to rise before most residents realized what was happening. Aid workers stationed in Gonaives noticed the change first. They had arrived earlier in the week for unrelated programs, distributing supplies before the next planting season. When the rain intensified, they monitored local conditions, following the updates from National Meteorological Services. The forecasts warned of significant rainfall, but did not yet signal an emergency. Still, they prepared to support local authorities if conditions worsened. Experience had taught them that degraded storms often brought severe flooding, even when winds weakened. The roads began to transform by mid-morning. In low-lying sections, water pooled quickly. Children who had planned to go to school stayed home. parents looked outside and saw that the rain had no break. Small drainage canals overflowed, spilling into walkways. Vendors sheltered under makeshift awnings, waiting for the sky to lighten. Some families moved items off the ground inside their homes, a habit formed during past storms. In the hills above Port-au-Prince, tiny streams formed along deforested slopes. Without roots to hold the soil, the water carved shallow lines through the earth. These first signs are familiar to residents. They often mark the beginning of something larger. People watched from their doorways and listened for changes in the sound of the rain. There is a tone that experienced villagers recognize. It is the deepening rush of water moving too fast. By noon, reports circulated that multiple rivers in the north were rising at a dangerous rate. The Civil Protection Directorate issued warnings, urging communities to avoid flooded paths and water crossings. National radio repeated the message every hour. The information did not sound alarming at first, but it urged caution. Most families used these updates to judge whether to move elderly relatives or secure livestock. Others waited, relying on instinct and past memory to decide their next steps. Haiti's vulnerability to storms has never rested solely on wind strength. Rainfall is often the greater threat. The intense downpours that accompany tropical systems have long been documented as triggers of severe flash floods. Geographers and climate experts have studied this pattern for decades. The steep terrain, combined with reduced vegetation, creates a natural funnel effect. Water collects in upper valleys, gathers speed, and surges downward with little warning. In St. Mark, residents living near the coastline noticed that the sea had grown rough, with waves hitting the shore more forcefully than usual. The sky darkened once more, and heavy rain blurred the horizon. Boats remained tied along the edge of the port, their captains watching the weather with concern. The fishermen knew that storms, even in decline, could shift suddenly. Many of them had passed through seasons of unpredictable weather tied to warming ocean conditions. As the afternoon continued, the rain intensified for a second time. The clouds no longer drifted. They sank over the land, thick and unmoving. Roads in the north became coated in mud and water. Streams swelled into brown channels. The movement of vehicles slowed to a crawl. Parents kept children indoors. Residents living near ravines listened carefully, knowing that these waterways often rise first. The danger lay in their speed. Near the town of Ennery, a group of students returning from morning classes found themselves trapped by a growing stream crossing the road. What had been a shallow trickle earlier now reached their knees. They stood on the edge, uncertain whether to proceed. Other passersby warned them to turn back. The rain showed no sign of stopping, and the water rose with every minute. The students made their way to a nearby home to wait. The homeowner welcomed them inside, offering dry space while they watched the storm through the doorway. Aid workers in Cap Haïtien received messages from local partners describing rivers rising across multiple communities. Bridges that normally allowed passage on foot had become unsafe. The workers recorded each report and relayed updates to regional offices. Their field guides noted that similar patterns had occurred in past rainy seasons. When storms stall or move slowly, rainfall concentrates over the same region. This causes flooding that can rival the impact of stronger storms. Throughout the countryside, people checked on neighbors. Families living near slopes looked carefully at the hills behind them, watching for signs of shifting soil. Small cracks in the ground can be an early warning. Sudden silence in the rain can mean something stronger is about to occur. Those with experience read these signals in real time. By late afternoon, the situation grew more concerning. Rivers in the departments of Nord and Nord-Est began spilling over their banks. Water ran through fields and across dirt roads. Goats and chickens sought higher ground. Farmers moved tools and seed stores to rooftops and lofts. The rain continued, thick and unending. In many communities, past experience with disaster shapes preparation. Haiti has endured storms that brought mass flooding. People remember which areas flood first, which routes stay open longest, and which buildings stand on higher ground. These memories guide decisions long before official alerts reach every household. On this day, those instincts were activated early, as the rain showed no sign of easing. The Civil Protection Directorate issued updated warnings, advising families to move away from rivers and unstable slopes. authorities asked residents to avoid crossing floodwaters under any circumstance. The guidance aligned with international flood safety standards, recognizing the sudden force of flowing water in these conditions. Warnings like these have been issued in many past storms, yet compliance is difficult when people must reach homes, relatives, or workplaces. As evening approached, the rain continued at the same relentless pace. Community leaders in the Northern Plains opened public buildings to shelter residents concerned about rising water. Churches, schools, and community centers often serve as the first places of refuge. Volunteers swept floors, arranged benches, and prepared for those who might arrive through the night. Along the outskirts of Cap Haitien, an aid group prepared inflatable boats in case evacuations became necessary. Their training emphasized rapid response to flash floods, especially in regions where roads easily become impassable. They monitored radio frequencies and watched the river that cut through the heart of the city. The water was higher than it had been in months. Travel through the region became difficult after sunset. Darkness made it hard to see flooded paths and washed-out sections of road. Motorists moved slowly, headlights reflecting off the rising water. Some chose to stay where they were until morning. Families lit lamps and candles in homes without electricity, listening to the rain against their roofs. The sound grew heavier, as if carrying more weight with each passing hour. In the hills above the Artibonite Valley, runoff intensified. Water flowed down the slopes and into the basin below. The valley, known for producing rice and other crops, began to fill with standing water. Farmers could only watch as the storm hovered over the region. They knew what could happen if the rain continued through the night. Meteorologists monitoring the storm noted that Melissa had slowed, its core drifting across the region in an uneven pattern. Weak storms often break apart and release widespread rain. Satellite images showed a broad mass of moisture rather than a defined eye or organized structure. This made prediction difficult. Rainfall totals could vary greatly over a small distance. Some areas might remain dry, while others experienced hours of heavy downpour. Residents living near the Rivière du Nord heard the sound of rushing water after nightfall. The river, usually calm, grew loud. Families stepped outside to gauge its behavior. They could see it rising, moving, with more force than before. They understood that this sound meant their next steps had to be quick. People began moving furniture to higher areas inside their homes. Others prepared to leave entirely if the situation worsened. By midnight, Melissa's rains had soaked the northern half of the country without stopping. Drains overflowed, streets filled, small streams became wide channels, the ground reached saturation point, unable to absorb any more. Every new drop flowed across the surface, gathering into larger pools and surges. The conditions were set for the events that would unfold at dawn. Aid workers in Gonaïves checked communication lines and prepared reports. They contacted local partners to gather information, though many phones had poor signal in the storm. Teams monitored river gauges where data was available. The readings showed rapid rise in water levels. The numbers hinted at danger approaching, though the full extent was not yet clear. People across the region tried to sleep, but the sound of the rain made rest difficult. Some waited through the night, listening for changes in the wind or movement outside. Others gathered belongings in small bags in case they needed to leave quickly. Community members spoke quietly about past storms and the moments when rising water forced families to climb rooftops or seek refuge at higher ground. Just before dawn, the sky remained dark. The storm clouds had not moved. The rain continued, steady and heavy. In multiple towns, the rivers began to cross their banks. Water crept into the first homes, covering floors and rising inch by inch. When families stepped out of bed, their feet touched cold water. The situation that would soon turn deadly had begun with nothing more than rain. It had arrived slowly, without wind or noise, without the drama of a hurricane, yet it carried enough force to test the survival of every community in its path. Chapter 2, The Deadliest Hours. The first surge of water arrived before most people were fully awake. It moved fast, cutting across the ground like a living force, rising from the rivers and pouring down from the slopes in a single, relentless push. The night had already soaked the soil until nothing more could be absorbed. When the next band of Melissa's rain settled over the region, the landscape shifted. what had been puddles at midnight became moving sheets of water at daybreak. This was the hour when survival depended on moments of instinct and decisions made in seconds. In the northern plains, families opened their doors to find water sweeping past their steps. It collected debris as it moved, carrying branches, bottles, sacks, and uprooted plants. A woman named Claudette stepped outside to check the street behind her home. She had gone to bed with the sound of steady rain, believing it would ease by morning. Instead, she faced a rising flood creeping toward her doorway. She called to her neighbors, urging them to wake. Together, they watched the water approach and understood it was only the beginning. In the Artibonite Valley, the rivers reacted faster than the communities surrounding them. Hours of concentrated rainfall had filled the upper channels, pushing water through narrow passes and into settled areas. Residents living along the lower banks often judged flood danger by the color and speed of the flow. On this morning, the water turned dark brown and moved with a speed that left no doubt. It was the kind of current that pulled away anything in its path. A family on the outskirts of Petite Rivière attempted to reach higher ground. The father, Emmanuel, carried his youngest child while his wife held the hand of their older daughter. They moved through water that reached their ankles at first, then their knees, then their waist as the ground dipped toward the river. Emmanuel understood they could not continue forward. He turned toward a cluster of homes on a slight rise. A neighbor pulled them onto his porch as the water surged past, higher than any of them had expected from a storm weakened to tropical status. Flash floods in Haiti do not arrive as gentle rises. They come in sudden waves. The steep hills and narrow valleys funnel water into tight corridors. When rainfall exceeds what the land can hold, the surge gathers power. It can lift doors, break walls, and sweep away structures built with lightweight materials. Many rural homes rely on simple foundations. A strong flood can shift them from their base within minutes. In the town of Quartier-Morin, the sound of rushing water grew so loud that residents first thought a truck had overturned. It was only when they stepped outside that they saw a wide stream flowing through the center of the neighborhood. Several people shouted for others to move quickly. Children ran toward a two-story concrete building that stood on higher ground. Adults formed a human chain to help the elderly cross the rising flow. The water moved with enough force to drag at their legs, pulling them sideways. The chain held only because those on the higher end braced against a concrete wall. In the hills near Dondon, landslides began to break loose. The saturated soil softened and gave way, carrying stones and mud downhill. A small footpath used by farmers disappeared under a wave of earth and branches. No one was walking the path at the time, but the slide blocked the only route connecting the hillside homes to the main road. Trapped by the conditions, families waited in their homes, listening to the storm and the shifting ground. They understood that leaving now would be more dangerous than staying in place. In Cap Haïtien, water from the Rivière du Nord spilled over its banks and rushed into the lower districts. People who lived close to the river had minutes to act. Some climbed onto rooftops. Others climbed onto the beds of trucks that were already partially submerged. A group of young men tied ropes between two houses to guide those who struggled through the current. They shouted instructions, timing their movements with the height of each surge. A woman carrying a small child clung to one of the ropes while a neighbor held her from behind, steadying her as the water pushed against them. Inside the city, the narrow streets funneled the flood into channels that intensified its force. Vehicles became trapped. Some floated several feet before lodging against walls or street corners. Market stalls, built from light wood and plastic sheeting, scattered across the water. Vendors tried to salvage what they could, but the current was too strong. They focused instead on reaching dry ground, leaving their belongings behind. Electricity failed in several neighborhoods as transformers overloaded in the rain. Power lines went dark one by one, leaving the early morning covered in dim gray light. The loss of electricity made communication harder. People could not charge phones. Radios shut off. Families called out to each other from windows and rooftops, trying to understand what was happening beyond their block. On the outskirts of Limonade, a small footbridge collapsed under the flood. It was a simple wooden structure used daily by farmers and students. When the central supports loosened, the bridge twisted and folded into the water, carried away in pieces. A group of children who normally crossed the bridge for school had stayed home that morning because of the rainfall. Their families later realized how close they had come to crossing at the wrong moment. The most dangerous period lasted less than 2 hours, but the intensity made every minute feel long. In several communities, storms like Melissa had taught people that rising water can trap even those who believe they are safe. A man named Jonas attempted to move his motorcycle to higher ground. The water reached the wheels and soon pushed the bike sideways. Jonas let go and stepped back, realizing the force could pull him under. He climbed onto a neighbor's porch and watched as the motorcycle drifted down the street, disappearing around a corner. Survival often depended on improvisation. In one neighborhood near Fort Liberté, residents used wooden doors as makeshift rafts. They placed children on the boards and guided them by hand to higher ground. Adults waded through chest-high water, holding the edges of the boards to keep them steady. The current made it difficult to walk, but the group moved with determination, calling out to each other as they advanced. In the community of Terrier Rouge, a group of residents climbed onto the roof of a school. From there, they shouted directions to others navigating the flood below. They pointed to areas where the water moved slower and warned against crossing sections where the current appeared too strong. Their vantage point allowed them to see the water's path as it spread across the lowlands. They saw when it reached the main road and when it began to push into the central market. Landslides continued in the hills as the rain intensified. One slide near Grande Rivière blocked a rural road, trapping a small bus carrying passengers who had attempted to travel before dawn. The bus was not directly struck, but the road became impossible to navigate. The driver turned off the engine and instructed everyone to remain inside. They waded through the storm, unable to move forward or backward. Through the windows, they watched soil and rocks fall across the hillside. In another village, residents watched as a section of hillside collapsed into a stream, sending a surge of muddy water into the valley below. The moment was quick, but the effects were immediate. A row of small homes near the stream flooded within seconds. Families ran outside, shouting warnings as they searched for high ground. The rain drowned out their voices, but neighbors saw the danger and moved quickly. The flash floods disrupted transportation across the region. Major roads were blocked by standing water or landslides. Motorists abandoned vehicles that could not pass through. People walked long distances through muddy paths, searching for safe routes. At several road crossings, communities placed branches and stones as markers to warn others of deep or fast-moving water. The storm damaged local power plants and transformers, cutting electricity to large areas. Without power, pumps used for water management could not function. Neighborhoods that relied on drainage systems found them overwhelmed. Water flowed backward through channels designed to carry it away. Residents used shovels, buckets, and even cooking pots to direct the flow away from their homes. In the city of Owanamint, the river that forms part of the border with the Dominican Republic rose rapidly. The crossing area, usually crowded with people exchanging goods, became flooded. Vendors attempted to save their items by stacking them on tables or crates, but the water soon reached the edges of the platform. Officials moved people away from the crossing, urging them to seek shelter. In rural sections of Nordeste, flash floods swept across farmland, pulling away crops and depositing layers of silt and debris. Farmers who had worked through the early morning hours watched helplessly as water erased weeks of preparation. They knew these fields would be difficult to restore once the flood receded. The most dramatic survival efforts occurred where the water moved fastest. In one neighborhood near the outskirts of Cap Haïtien, a concrete wall collapsed under the pressure of the flood. Water poured into the yard of a family home. The family moved quickly, helping their elderly mother onto a wooden table that floated on one side. They guided her toward the back of the property, where the land rose slightly. They used the table as a platform, pushing it inch by inch until they reached a safer area. Nearby, several residents climbed into the branches of a large mango tree. The trunk stood firm despite the rushing water around its base. Parents lifted children into the branches and then climbed behind them. From that height, they watched the flood carry away fences, barrels, and household items. Aid workers monitoring the situation radioed updates to their teams. They recorded each report of rising water and noted the speed at which the situation developed. Their training prepared them for sudden flooding in areas with unstable terrain. They understood that the window for response could close quickly if roads became impassable. In one district of Cap Haitien, a man named René attempted to cross a narrow alley to reach his neighbor, who had shouted for help. The water reached his waist and pushed him sideways. He grabbed a metal gate and held on. Two other residents tied a rope around his waist to pull him back when the current shifted. Together, they formed a line and moved toward the trapped neighbor. They reached him moments before the water rose further, guiding him to safety. Throughout the region, people weighed risk against necessity. Some decided to stay inside their homes, believing it was safer than attempting to move through the flood. Others moved quickly to higher buildings, carrying essential items in bags or wrapped cloth. Families helped one another, shouting across the water and signaling with hand gestures when rain and noise made speech impossible. At the peak of the flood, the streets of several towns became unrecognizable. Landmarks disappeared under the water. Footpaths turned into channels. In some areas, the water moved slowly, spreading outward into flat plains. In others, it raced through narrow streets and ravines with such force that even strong adults struggled to stand. The flash floods reached their highest levels between sunrise and mid-morning. The combination of stalled rainfall, saturated ground, and overflowing rivers created a brief but overwhelming period of danger. The region had faced rain-heavy storm remnants before, but each event brought its own signature. Melissa's signature was speed and volume, concentrated in a short span. As the hours passed, the rain began to ease. Clouds remained thick, but the intensity dropped. Water continued to move across the landscape, but the surges became less violent. People emerged cautiously from their shelters, stepping onto muddy ground. Some climbed down from rooftops. Others pushed open doors blocked by debris. Everywhere, people took the same first step. They looked toward the areas hardest hit. They called out names. They sought to understand who survived the deadliest hours of the storm. The danger was not over, but the most violent period had passed. What remained would reveal the full toll of the morning's floods. Chapter 3, What Remains. When the rain finally weakened, the landscape that emerged was not the one that had existed the day before. The floodwaters receded slowly, revealing the imprint of their force. Thick layers of mud covered roads, doorways, and fields. Debris lay scattered across open spaces. Stray animals wandered through the flooded plains, unsettled by the hours they had spent searching for dry ground. The danger of the storm's peak had passed, but the struggle to understand and repair the damage was only beginning. In the early morning, as clouds thinned and pale light spread across the northern departments, the first assessments began. Residents stepped cautiously through the mud, looking for neighbors and checking structures to see what remained intact. Homes built close to riverbanks showed the most visible impact. Walls had collapsed where the current struck hardest. Doors hung loose or were missing entirely. Furniture lay overturned or carried outside by the water. Livestock pens were empty. Farming tools that families relied on had been swept away. The Civil Protection Directorate dispatched teams to the hardest hit areas. Their vehicles moved slowly across damaged roads, navigating around fallen trees and overturned debris. Teams recorded blocked routes, missing bridges, and isolated communities. They took note of areas where water still pooled, making it impossible to pass. They coordinated with local leaders, asking for information about the most urgent needs. Communication lines were limited, but radios and satellite devices allowed the first reports to reach central offices. UN partners working in the region began their own rapid assessments. Their approach followed established procedures used after past storms. They sought to determine the number of displaced families, the condition of shelters, and the status of essential services. They documented damage to schools, clinics, water points, and agricultural land. They noted cases where communities had lost access to drinking water because wells were contaminated by floodwater. These early assessments were critical for planning the next steps. Residents helped each other clear paths to make way for the assessment teams. In Cap Haitien, groups of neighbors use shovels, sticks, and even kitchen utensils to push mud out of courtyards and lanes. Children gathered small stones and debris into piles. Adults lifted heavy branches and broken pieces of wood. In some neighborhoods, people formed lines, passing buckets of water to clean surfaces and tools. The work was slow, but it returned a sense of stability. Local officials opened community buildings to serve as emergency shelters. Families whose homes had flooded moved into schoolrooms and churches, bringing whatever belongings they managed to save. Volunteers arranged sleeping spaces, set up cooking areas, and distributed basic supplies. Aid groups delivered tarps, blankets, and hygiene items. They worked with community leaders to identify vulnerable residents, including the elderly, pregnant women, and people with chronic health conditions. The loss of access to clean water became one of the most pressing concerns. Floods often contaminate water sources, and this storm was no exception. Wells and river-fed systems carried silt, debris, and bacteria. Health workers warned that waterborne diseases could spread if affected communities did not receive clean supplies quickly. They set up distribution points where residents collected water in containers. They provided purification tablets and explained how to use them safely. Road conditions varied widely. Some areas were accessible within hours. Others remained isolated for days. Landslides blocked mountainous routes, and floodwater carved new channels across dirt roads. Bridges that once connected villages to markets and clinics were damaged or swept away. These disruptions made it difficult to move supplies, especially to remote communities. Emergency responders used motorcycles, horses, and on foot when vehicles could not pass. Agricultural fields bore significant damage. Farmers surveyed land covered in mud, gravel, and uprooted vegetation. Crops that had been weeks from harvest were gone. Rice fields were flooded with dirty water. Vegetable plots were flattened. Fruit trees leaned sideways, their roots exposed. For many families, these losses meant months of reduced income and food supply. Agricultural officers documented the damage for later recovery programs. The storm affected local economies in subtle but wide-reaching ways. Small shops lost inventory. Market vendors lost products that had been washed into the streets. Artisans who relied on tools or materials stored in small sheds found their supplies gone. Transport workers lost their livelihoods temporarily as roads closed and fuel supplies were disrupted. The storm did not last long, but its economic impact extended far beyond the hours of rainfall. In towns across Nord and Nordest, the cleanup continued. Volunteers cleared drainage channels to prevent further flooding from the remaining rain. They removed blockages from culverts and cleared mud from the entrances of clinics. Health workers resumed limited services, treating injuries and providing first aid. They monitored the health of displaced residents and assured communities that more assistance was on the way. Community leaders held meetings to coordinate local response. They gathered under makeshift tents or inside partially damaged buildings. They discussed the most urgent needs: food, water, medical supplies, shelter materials, and road access. They made lists of families most affected by the flood. They relayed this information to government teams and aid organizations, ensuring that support reached those who needed it first. As days passed, the broader picture of the storm's impact came into focus. Satellite imagery provided by partner agencies confirmed the extent of the flooding. It showed rivers that had expanded far beyond their usual paths. It showed patches of affected land across wide areas of the northern plains. It showed how the geography of Haiti shaped the pattern of destruction. Steep slopes contributed to landslides, while flat plains trapped standing water. The images offered an understanding that could support future planning. Projects focused on long-term resilience had long warned of the consequences of deforestation. The storm reinforced these warnings. Without tree cover to stabilize soil, slopes eroded quickly. Without natural barriers, water rushed into the valleys with greater speed. Environmental specialists pointed to the storm as another example of how degraded landscapes increase the risk of flood damage. They emphasized the importance of reforestation, watershed management, and soil conservation. These efforts take years, but they represent the most durable protection. Urban planners highlighted challenges in towns where rapid expansion had outpaced infrastructure. Informal housing in floodplains placed families in zones of high risk. Drainage systems were limited, road networks were vulnerable to erosion, Melissa's remnants exposed these weaknesses. It showed how even a weakening storm could cause widespread disruption when the built environment lacked adequate defenses. Climate experts noted the trend of storms carrying more moisture. Studies across the Caribbean have documented shifts in rainfall intensity linked to warming seas and changing atmospheric patterns. Even when wind speeds decrease, storms can drop heavy rain across concentrated areas. Haiti has seen this pattern in past years, and Melissa followed the same signature. Experts urge policymakers to integrate climate projections into planning, emphasizing that the country must prepare not only for hurricanes, but also for rain-heavy storms that bring flash floods. Communities reflected on the storm in their own ways. In rural areas, elders recalled past floods and compared them to the recent event. They spoke of the need to restore old paths, strengthen riverbanks, and improve communication systems. In urban centers, residents discussed the need for improved drainage and stronger building materials. Fishermen debated the best ways to secure boats in unpredictable storms. Farmers shared strategies for recovering soil fertility after floods. These discussions formed the foundation for local resilience. Humanitarian teams continued distributing supplies. They prioritized families whose homes were destroyed or rendered unsafe. They provided tarpaulins, toolkits, and basic materials for temporary repair. They distributed food rations to those who lost access to markets or whose crops were destroyed. They supported community kitchens where volunteers prepared shared meals. They worked with teachers to prepare schools to reopen once buildings were cleaned and repaired. As more information flowed in, government authorities assessed the possibility of requesting international support. They reviewed the findings of rapid assessments. They examined the extent of displacement and the condition of public infrastructure. They considered the time needed for communities to recover without assistance. Cooperation among national and international partners grew stronger as the scope of the storm became clearer. In Cap Haïtien, a group of residents who had taken shelter on a school roof during the flood returned to their homes. They found mud covering the floors and walls. The smell of wet earth filled the air. They worked together to clean each room, sweeping mud outside and washing surfaces with buckets of water. They laughed with relief when they found belongings that had not been lost. The act of cleaning gave them a sense of control after hours of uncertainty. In the Artibonite Valley, farmers who had lost crops gathered at community meetings to discuss recovery. Agricultural officers explained which seeds would be distributed first. They discussed methods for restoring soil and clearing fields. They emphasized the importance of preparing for the next planting season, even amid the destruction. Farmers listened with patience, knowing that recovery would take time, but committed to the work ahead. Health workers moved through shelters to monitor conditions. They looked for signs of dehydration, respiratory issues, and infections. They taught families how to store water safely and how to prevent illnesses common after floods. They reassured parents and encouraged communities to remain vigilant. Engineers inspected bridges and culverts. They determined which structures could be repaired and which needed replacement. They marked areas where the flood had weakened foundations. They planned temporary crossings for areas cut off by collapsed bridges. Their work was essential for restoring mobility. Journalists documented the stories of the storm. They interviewed residents who had survived the flash floods. They photographed damaged homes, swept out roads, and community cleanups. Their reports conveyed the scale of the disaster and the resilience of the people who endured it. They highlighted the strength of community networks and the quick response of local authorities. As days stretched into weeks, small signs of recovery appeared. Roads cleared, markets reopened, children played outside shelters, families repaired roofs and patched walls, farmers cleared debris from their fields, traders returned to border posts once floodwater retreated, public services resumed in stages. But the storm's lessons remained. Tropical Storm Melissa had arrived weakened, yet it produced devastation across wide regions. It demonstrated once again that Haiti's vulnerability is not limited to hurricanes with strong winds. Rain-heavy storms, even those in decline, can cause lasting damage when they stall over the country's steep terrain. The effects ripple across communities, economy, health, and environment. Experts, officials, and residents all recognize the need for long-term solutions. Reforestation programs, river management, resilient housing, improved drainage, climate adaptation strategies, and strengthened emergency systems form the core of these discussions. Implementing these solutions requires resources and cooperation. The storm underscored the urgency of these efforts. In every town where the floods struck, the same question arose: how can the country survive the next storm? The answer lay not in fear, but in the determination of the people who had endured Melissa's remnants. They had woken to rising waters, climbed to safety in the deadliest hours, and emerged ready to rebuild. Their survival reflected the strength of their communities and the commitment to continue despite hardship. As Haiti looked toward the future, the memory of Melissa served as a reminder and a guide. The storm revealed the challenges that remain, but it also highlighted the resilience that endures. And in that resilience, the foundation for survival grew stronger than the flood that tried to wash it away.